It's so easy, just a click of the button, and here it comes.
But Catherine Roster of the University of New Mexico Anderson School of Management warns that overbuying during the holidays can lead to credit card debt. And it harms the climate because making and shipping unused goods wastes resources and emits carbon pollution. So Roster suggests making a budget and sticking to it. And if you find yourself adding too many items to an online shopping cart, stop and walk away.
Let them sit for 24 hours and then think about whether that was really the right thing and what you really want to do.
She says friends and family may appreciate sharing an experience with you or receiving something handmade more than a store-bought gift.
I think if you take time to think about the things in your life and the people in your life that are most important to you, that there's a lot of better ways to honor those relationships and to make people feel appreciated and feel the real spirit of the holiday.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking stories, news, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Carmel Pierre-Louis, Dave Johnson, and Althea Billings. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Mary Sherman, Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Mark Richardson, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
You're listening to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gaskill. Before we get to today's interview, I want to take just a couple minutes to talk about a super important piece of legislation that you need to take action on if you care about public lands. The so-called Fix Our Forest Act is making its way through Congress, but it should be called Fuck the Forests. We've talked about this bill before in the show, and I am hoping to devote an entire episode to it soon. For now, if you haven't heard of the Fix Our Forest Act, also known by its acronym FOFA, here's what you need to know. FOFA would work hand in glove with the Trump administration's executive orders on logging to dramatically expand both commercial and non-commercial logging on national forests. Among many other provisions, this wide-ranging bill makes it easier to avoid bedrock environmental laws like the National Environmental Protection Act and the Endangered Species Act. This allows massive so-called categorical exclusions of up to 10,000 acres, or 15 square miles, basically removing almost all public oversights of projects on federal forest land. It even uses emergency authorities to allow public consultation after a project has been completed. FOFA also advances the discredited narrative that commercial logging and grazing will protect communities from wildfire. As we've discussed many times on this show, research overwhelmingly shows that measures like home hardening, defensible space, and emergency planning are the best, most cost-effective ways to protect communities from fire. This bill does not provide funding for those efforts. And I want to be clear. I believe there is a place for active forest management in service of healthy forest restoration and wildfire mitigation. But effing the forests is not the answer. At best, F the Forests Act is a misguided policy that shifts resources away from what works to ineffective management. At worst, it is a blatant, bad faith attempt to liquidate public forest lands for short-term corporate profits, which could destroy ecosystems and put communities at even greater risk from fire. Infuriatingly, FOFA also has bipartisan support, including within the Oregon and Washington congressional delegations, and it is gathering momentum. I personally believe that many legislators know this is bad policy, but they are under tremendous pressure to be seen to be doing something about fire, even if it is useless or ultimately counterproductive. The only way we can stop a new liquidation of federal forests is through massive pressure. Please call or email your senators today. It is really easy. To find their contact info, just go to democracy.io, that's democracy.io, or you can literally just type "call my senator" into your internet search engine of choice. Groups like Cascadia Wildlands, Oregon Wild, the Sierra Club, and many others also have take action pages and easy ways to plug into the fight. So please do not let this bill pass without making your voice heard. Thank you for taking action, and let's get back to our main interview. Are Amazon data centers fueling a water contamination crisis in eastern Oregon? Rolling Stone recently published a major investigative piece asking that very question. But Amazon is far from the only major corporation polluting the drinking water of Morrow County residents, and this crisis has been going on for decades. Oregon Rural Action has been organizing in and advocating for communities in eastern Oregon for years. They were heavily quoted in that Rolling Stone article, and they have been a strong voice on this and many other environmental justice issues, especially on the east side. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Caleb Lay, ORA's Research and Policy Director, and Saida Sanchez, Director of Community Organizing for ORA. Before we get started, the show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Reach out anytime. Let me know what you think of the show. If you got guest ideas, scathing criticisms, or even if you like it, I love to hear positive feedback as well. Okay, Caleb and Saida, welcome to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be here.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for having us. Excited to get into our convo today.
Caleb, you've been on the show once before. We talked about your flyover of Three Mile Canyon Farms. But for folks that didn't hear that, or as a refresher, could one or both of you give us just a quick intro to Oregon Rural Action? You know, where are you all based? What's the mission and primary campaigns? How can people learn more?
We can take a crack at that. So Oregon Rural Action, we're a small nonprofit that does community organizing out here in Northeast Oregon. Primarily, we work with underserved communities, and our work has really manifested around work in the Lower Umatilla Basin, which is a region in Northeast Oregon. It's sort of the northern parts of Morrow and Umatilla counties. It's highly rural, one of the fastest diversifying regions in the entire state of Oregon. It's also one of the wealthiest regions in Oregon. But despite that, has one of the higher rates of income inequality in the state. So it gives you a little bit of a peek at some of the challenges that we're dealing with out there.
Saida, did you want to add anything to that?
If I could just add, Caleb and I are from Oregon. We grew up in Eastern Oregon. So the work that we've been doing here and in our communities is really personal to us.
Well, thank you for that. So let's talk about the groundwater crisis. Give us, you know, the basics of what is going on with the groundwater in Morrow County. You know, what are the issues? What are the contaminants? Who's being affected? You know, and what are those health impacts?
Yeah, I can speak a little bit to the situation. And Zaida, maybe you want to speak to the people. Essentially, the Lower Umatilla Basin is a highly industrialized part of Oregon. Lots of industrialized agriculture, lots of factories that make processed foods, some of the biggest dairies and feedlots in the country, as far as beef go. And in all of this area, there's a huge amount of nitrogen pollution being loaded onto farmland. And plants love nitrogen. It makes really good fertilizer. But because the soil in this area is so sandy, and because there is so much being produced and spread on this farmland, it has leached down into the groundwater. And the result is a groundwater pollution crisis that's been going on for almost 36 years now, at least. The state of Oregon learned about this problem back in 1990. Declared a groundwater management area because nitrate in groundwater is such a huge health risk, but didn't really take any meaningful action until 2022, when a local county commissioner and ORA started going door to door, testing people's wells and figuring out that they were drinking highly contaminated water.
And to add a little bit about the people in our communities, we're a big farm worker community, right? Big Latino community. I think the Morrow County has the majority minority community, right? Big Latino community there. And all of Eastern Oregon as well, or not all of Eastern Oregon, Umatilla County as well. We have a big immigrant community here, right, that has come for all the opportunity there is to do the important work, right, in making sure that we have food to provide our communities, right, growing the food, harvesting the food, and then along with all these other job opportunities at the processing plants.
Yeah, and for all those, oh, sorry, go ahead, please.
And one of the important things to note here is that all of this sort of combines to be a perfect storm for not only economic, but also racial and social injustice, right? We have huge industry making massive amounts of profits in a very rural community where people don't have a lot of options as far as economic mobility, right? You can't quit your job at one plant and go to the other because they talk to each other, or they're right next door. They're basically part of the same industry. If you quit one farm, you can't really necessarily go to another. You're almost trapped in the industry you work in. So it gives big industry a lot of power in a situation where they already started with a lot on top of it.
Yeah, I was just going to say before I interrupted you, you know, these folks are doing this hard, unglamorous work, and for their troubles, they are having their drinking water, you know, poisoned by their employers, essentially. I mean, those are my words, not necessarily you all's, but I do want to talk about the players responsible here and why this is not being addressed the way it would if, say, there was groundwater contamination in, I don't know, West Lynn or Lake Oswego, for instance.
Yeah, so I think as someone that grew up in this community and as an organizer in my community, it's really hard to get our community, our Latino community, to get engaged on issues because, like, historically, right, like, we haven't had as many opportunities to make our voices heard, have our voices heard, right? And as Caleb mentioned earlier, right, like, there's also fear of retaliation. So a lot of our stories and why we're here, right, why our families are here, right, revolve around the work opportunity, right? Like, people got up and sacrificed what was once home to build a new home here and build strong roots to contribute to this new place called home. And seeing, like, a vision of lots of opportunities for their families and future generations. And sometimes due to our legal status, we might want to vote, but unfortunately we can't. So sometimes that is what holds us back from being able to have a say in what we want things to look like or how it affect us. For example, if you aren't taught, right, the importance of your vote and how that could be affecting laws or policies that affect your community, you don't realize, like, the importance of that, right? And so a lot of the folks that live here are, like, newer generations, right? Like, I'm second generation. And thankfully, my dad really taught me the importance of voting, right? Like, that was instilled at me at a young age. But I know in my family, that's not the case for everyone. So there's still a lot of opportunity here to engage more folks civically, make sure that our community sees the power of their vote and the ability to influence these different decision makers, stakeholders, and whatnot, so that the outcomes are better in our favor.
I think you're bringing up a really important point there, also including the fact that these folks are, if they did want to raise their voice, would be raising their voices against multi-billion dollar conglomerates with huge power, not just nationally, not just statewide, but in your own county government. So, Caleb, could you talk a little bit about who the responsible actors here are and why this is not, why this has been such an intractable issue.
Oh yeah, try and stop me. You hit the nail on the head there. I mean, these are massive corporations. You know, most of the pollution in the groundwater, the nitrate in the groundwater that has polluted people's wells and made them sick, comes from agriculture or the industries directly related to it. So, you know, industrialized mass scale agriculture on thousands and thousands of acres using chemical additives to maximize their yield. And then the factories where those crops go to and get turned into processed food. The easiest one off the top of my head would be Lamb Weston, right? Harvests tons and tons of potatoes out of the farmland in and around the lower Umatilla Basin, goes into their factories. They're the largest frozen potato product manufacturer in North America. Last fiscal year, they spent almost $500 million just on shareholder enrichment, things like stock buybacks and cash dividends, not just keeping their plants open, paying their workers $500 million just on enriching the rich people who run the corporation, right? So, I mean, that's just one example. And then you throw on top of that other, you know, multi-billion-dollar corporations like PGE, Tillamook, a bunch of these international irrigated agricultural operations like Farmland Reserve, or you know, on and on the list goes. It's a who's who of mega corporations in the industrialized ag world. Not even to mention Three Mile Canyon Farms, one of the largest dairies in the United States. They're part of a CAFO complex, a confined animal feeding operation complex that's permitted for, I think, about 136,000 head of cows at one time. I mean, wrap your head around that, 136,000 cows, you know, producing manure and their dairies produced wastewater that's all full of nitrogen. All that has to go somewhere. So it's exactly like you were saying, where folks in this community are up against a modern day Goliath. It is all of the money in the world against people who have very little money, have very little civic power, and have very little representation to help them use it too. It's not a huge wonder that this continues to get worse and that the pollution issues continue to compound. You know, we're talking about nitrate today, but on top of that, we have some of the worst air pollution in the state of Oregon, even though this is a highly rural area and Morrow County is only about 15,000 people or so. The whole lower Umatilla Basin is around 45,000 human beings. But the industrial air pollution that gets released there in 1 year is roughly the same as putting 1.1 million cars in this tiny little shred of the state and running them all year. It's a little out of hand. And I personally can't help but think that part of the reason that this has gotten so bad and continues to get worse is because the economics and the politics are highly intertwined. The votes in the lower Umatilla Basin don't necessarily elect the next governor. So we haven't historically seen governors pay much attention to what's going on here. At the same time, the economic power that's produced in the lower Umatilla absolutely could influence those elections, and does.
Very, very well put. There's a couple threads that I want to maybe put a pin in and pick up again later. I appreciate that you mentioned Tillamook there, because, you know, Tillamook makes great cheese. They have this beautiful bucolic image of, you know, family farmers supplying their dairy, and that obviously is not the case. I would love to see, not that this is you all's responsibility, but like a more concerted campaign targeting Tillamook for their kind of greenwashing of their practices. I know they're one of the defendants in a lawsuit that we might get to a little later, but I do want to talk about the new player in the neighborhood, relatively speaking, in this Rolling Stone article. So talk about the Amazon data centers and how they might be exacerbating this issue.
Yeah, gladly. Amazon is a big player and getting much bigger very, very fast. You know, we've seen this data center and AI boom across the country, across the world, but Oregon is definitely playing its part in that. The lower Umatilla Basin, on top of having such bad nitrate pollution in our groundwater and all the air pollution and all the over-industrialization we're already dealing with, is the number one data center hub in Oregon and one of the fastest growing data center hubs in the country. We have five new campuses, not just server sets, but campuses under construction right now. on top of already being leading in the entire state. You know, it's an area where, you know, a big corporation will come in and say, hey, there's a lot of cheap land. It's right on the river. There's a lot of access to water. And, you know, the local government is not standing up to us. So let's go in. Let's grab up all the land we can. Let's build these servers. And let's get all that cheap electricity and cheap water while we can. Right. What we have seen from documents related to these data centers is that, you know, people generally understand data centers use a ton of electricity. It's incredible. It's like a small city going in, right? They also use a ton of water. They run it through the pipes as sort of this non-contact cooling water to keep their servers from overheating, which is super important for them. The problem is that as Amazon is running this water through their servers and through their data centers, it's heating up too. It's taking that heat and moving it out. It's like if you've ever made Jell-O. Or right, you start with water, you add sugar, and then you boil off some of that water. The same sort of thing is happening with the data centers. They're bringing in water that's full of contaminants to start. They're losing a bunch of that water to evaporation, and then what they're left with is water with a much higher concentration of contaminants. And because this entire area is so over-industrialized and industrialized ag is so dominant, what happens then, more often than not, is that that wastewater that's highly contaminated is pushed back out onto agricultural fields and loaded as fertilizer. Now, the nitrate obviously is the number one issue there, but I have concerns about other contaminants that might be getting in. You know, lead is not going to boil off. If there's PFAS getting in there, that's a problem too.
Well, we don't have time to get into all the twists and turns of the local politics there, but I know that it is a very fraught situation politically over there right now. There were two county commissioners recalled because of the awareness they were trying to raise around nitrate pollution. That Rolling Stone article details some pretty egregious, I would say alleged, I'll cover my butt here and say alleged corruption by some local figures. And I believe that somebody's car might have even been torched. So talk about the political situation, the difficulties that you all maybe even experience in the work that you're doing. And just, I would say, also, Saida, some of the difficulties in organizing some of these communities you're talking about.
I could talk a little bit about some of those challenges. And I was already talking about it, right? Like a little bit earlier with the question about how some people can be concerned or feel very powerless in making their voices heard. The instance with the truck fire was we were actually hosting the members of the BIPOC caucus to visit our area, right, to better understand what was going on with the nitrate contamination problem in Morrow County. We hosted like a tour to kind of see some of the area, understand the West Glen community, which is one of the main neighborhoods that we've been organizing on this issue. And so we took them to a few houses and hear some of the challenges that directly impacted community members were experiencing. After that tour, we headed over to a meeting with the legislators to hear more from directly impacted community members. While we're in the meeting, we get word from community member that one of our coworkers' trucks was on fire on their property. Unfortunately, the truck was completely destroyed, totally engulfed in flames. So, you know, those kinds of, you connect the dots and you feel like it's personal, right?
That must have been terrifying for you all.
It was very terrifying. And as organizers, we recognize that, you know, sometimes we're going to make people uncomfortable with what it is we're trying to accomplish, right? We're building power in the community. We're organizing around issues that are important to community. And sometimes that means going against people in power, right? And so that case was closed as suspicious and undetermined, but it definitely was a wake-up call for us to understand, right, like what are the risks, and not necessarily giving in or backing down, just more awareness, right, on like, okay, like clearly, you know, if it really was something intentional towards us to kind of like scare us off, like a really intense scare tactic, then we're making someone uncomfortable, right? So you can kind of view it as a a win in a way, not necessarily the truck fire, right? But just having an impact on someone, making someone uncomfortable to the point that they would want to send us a really scary message, right?
Thank you for telling us that story. Again, that must have been so scary for all of you. And I have so much respect for you all for continuing the work that you're doing in the face of that. I want to talk about some of the other facets of you all's work and make sure that we have time for that. So there's a lot more that we could say on the groundwater contamination crisis. As briefly as we can, what needs to happen to solve this crisis? What is not happening that needs to happen? Where are the levers of power that need to be pulled? How can people learn more and help out?
That's sort of the ultimate question here, right? and we look at it as sort of like three tiers where different things need to happen. First, obviously, everyone who's at risk of drinking this water has to be protected. Every well needs tested and retested as often as possible so that we know everyone who has a contaminated well is getting a safe source of water, whether that be bottled or a filter or something else in the meantime. And what we've seen too that's really worrying is as people who have been tested retest, they're going from safe to unsafe at a pretty high rate because the pollution continues to get worse. Long term, you know, you can't live your life out of a 5-gallon bottle forever. Especially, you know, those things are heavy for someone in their 70s or 80s to be lugging those in off the porch, you know, to cook with, to drink, so for their pets or whatever it may be. That's just not sustainable. We need permanent water infrastructure for people, and that is going to cost a lot of money. Getting that built and paid for needs to be just. It should not be the victims of this pollution who are footing the bill for building all of this. It should be those responsible, especially considering those affected have very little in the way of financial resources, and those responsible have literally billions of dollars. And you know, the other side of this too is city water systems are affected too, not just domestic wells. Those city water systems are protected by more regulations, but as the nitrate level goes up, they're going to be impacted too. And if we're just connecting well users to city water, that's not a permanent solution. We have got to get our arms around this pollution. And that is going to take Oregon's natural resource agencies growing a little bit of backbone and standing up to these powerful polluters. They need to implement strong, enforceable regulations. And unfortunately, what we've seen thus far is that even if they come in talking the right talk, saying that they're going to start regulating sources of pollution, once they get around to it, it ends up being the same sort of status quo, voluntary measures to reduce pollution. And those have never worked, not in the 36 years that this has been a groundwater management area. And then sort of the overarching umbrella to all of this is that the entire dynamic has got to change. We have got to stop putting profits over public health and polluters over people. We gotta reshift the dynamic here, and we have to start centering the well-being of the community over the economic well-being of big industry. And that is exactly what's been happening. And I think that dynamic is what's driving all of these other problems: our political problems, the retaliation issues that we've faced, the disenfranchisement that our communities are dealing with. All of it. It starts. That is the poison root here, right?
So if people are hearing this and are inspired or angry, you know, what should people listening do?
Please come check out our website, OregonRural.org. We've got a lot of resources there. We've got interactive maps of polluters and where that pollution is going, how people are affected. Please, if you have the means, consider throwing a little bit of money our way to help us keep the lights on and help us keep this work going. It takes a lot, and we're up against folks who have a lot more resources than us. So every little bit that anyone can do really, really helps. And then, you know, if you have the opportunity to talk to your elected officials, mention this. You know, say that this is not okay. This does not stand. Even though I don't live in the Lower Umatilla, I am not okay with what's happening there. And keep an eye open every time you walk down the freezer aisle in your grocery store. You might be surprised how often you are coming across the fruits of all of this harm.
Absolutely. Before we move on, Saida, do you have anything else that you want to add on that point?
I mean, I'll just echo what's happening with this water crisis that we're experiencing in Eastern Oregon does not reflect Oregon values. So just, you know, like Caleb said, when you're talking to your electeds, when you're talking to folks that care about these issues, let them know that you're paying attention and you're aware of what's happening to your neighbors in Eastern Oregon and that you don't agree with it. And maybe think twice when you're at the grocery store buying products, knowing that they're linked to a lot of the contamination and harm that's happening in our state.
Yeah. And, you know, if some of those products that you forego might happen to rhyme with Millamook, maybe let that company know why you're not buying it too, you know, because they need to hear from us that it's not worth the suffering that they're inflicting on humans and non-humans. So on that note then, like I said, I appreciate the work you all are doing so much. I think this is the biggest environmental justice issue in the state, maybe in the region, what is happening there. And so thank you so much for your work on that. Caleb Lay and Saida Sanchez, thank you so much for joining me on Coast Range Radio.
Thanks for having us, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
That's it for this episode of Coast Range Radio. We are an independent, volunteer-run program. You can find Coast Range Radio free and ad-free on all podcast apps. You can follow us on Instagram, give us reviews, all that stuff, and share it with your friends. You can also reach out directly anytime. Our email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening. Let's make it through this together.
Esto es KBOO Portland por el 90.7 FM.
We know a KBOO membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of support.